This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. When the Avalanches first grabbed people's ears back in the year 2000, they did it with a song that sounded like nothing else. That song, Frontier Psychiatrist, along with all of the songs on their debut album, Since I Left You, was an intricately assembled collage of tons of samples. The album was critically adored and gained the Avalanches scores of fans. And then it took 16 years for them to release another record. 2016's also sample-heavy Wildflower. Thankfully, it didn't take nearly as long for their third album to arrive, and this time they mix their beloved sampling style with a bevy of guest vocalists and much more live instrumentation. Today, I talk to Robbie Chater and Tony DeBlasi of The Avalanches about their new approach, their love of sampling, and why this album came so much quicker than their last. But first, the title track from that new album. Here is a bit of The Avalanches featuring vocals from Blood Orange. We will always love you.
Draped in monotony, what's my life gotten me? Hard to be glorious when two minds meet in the corner and the story is being told by me to you. Take another hit, what else to do? Think about leaving the house, but my fears aren't letting up.
This is World Cafe. You just heard We Will Always Love You from The Avalanches. That song featured Blood Orange. Also, if you've got a keen ear, you may have caught a sample of the Roche's Hammond song in there. We Will Always Love You is the title track from The Avalanches' new album. And today I am joined by The Avalanches. Robbie and Tony are here with me. Welcome to the World Cafe.
Hey, thank you for having us.
Thank you, Raina.
So first of all, could I have each of you introduce yourselves, say your full names so we know whose voice is whose? Tony, why don't you start?
I am Tony DeBlasi from Melbourne, Australia.
That was fantastic, Tone.
Thank you.
I'm Robbie Chater from Melbourne.
You know, you finished this album during lockdown, and in Australia, in Melbourne, lockdowns were, you know, pretty intense. Mm. So how did that affect the completion of this record?
It was, I mean, we were mostly done. We were mostly done. Probably the last 15% or something we finished when after lockdown began, but it was more just the strange feeling of the city shutting down. It was quite distressing for people with, you know, unemployment uncertainty, and they couldn't see their families. I mean, the lockdowns were very, very harsh here. And then it was the trying to finish a record and release it during lockdown, which was very challenging, and, you know, vinyl pressing plants closed down and all that kind of thing. But we got most of the record done before, and we just feel like we're no different to anyone else in any industry. It was really, really tough for everybody and really uncertain for everybody and really hard for the city.
Yeah, I mean, it was meant to come out in May. So it wasn't meant to be like, you know, we had We Will Always Love You, the track you just played, came out in January, and then we had Running Red Lights, and then it was going to be the album after that. So
we did have it scheduled in time for your best of 2020 list.
But, yeah, yeah, we really did.
Well, I think we can make an exception, and I'll throw you on my next year's best of list. you know, even though this has been a year that's been sort of defined by isolation for a lot of people, this album is sort of the opposite of that. You brought in so many guests for this record. I'm just going to list off a few of them here. Blood Orange, MGMT, Johnny Marr, Leon Bridges, Perry Farrell, Tricky, Jamie XX, Karen O, Kurt Vile, Rivers Cuomo, Pink Sifu, Mick Jones. That's not even all of them. You've had guests on your albums before, but this feels like a whole new level. So why did you want to bring in so many different voices? Robbie, do you want to start?
Yeah, I've got to say, it's a little, I've never actually heard them all read out like that.
It's a little embarrassing, kind of.
It's a lot. It sounds like a music festival or something.
It would be a good one.
Sorry, what was the question again?
Well, why did you want to bring in so many different voices?
Well, I mean, we didn't plan to. We just got rolling, and then it kept growing and growing. The plan was, with Tony and I and our collaborator Andrew, like, we just thought, let's just get going, even if we just make five songs. And I think when we began, like, Kanye just put out an 8-song album or something, and it was almost a way of tricking ourselves and getting ourselves going. Like, we don't have to make another 15 years sample odyssey. We can just, you know, make a bunch of songs and put them out quickly. So that was how we went into it. And of course, us being up, us, it ended up being this long journey of a 25 song record. But when we began, it just began with Rivers Cuomo and Dev Hynes. He was the other early guest. And then we just got on a roll, and people just seemed to really connect with what we were trying to express. So we feel very fortunate.
Right. And I should mention, and we're going to get into this in a bit, but between your first album and your second album, there was a 16-year break. This one was much shorter. We'll talk about that in a second. Robbie, maybe you can answer this. What kind of guidance do you give somebody when they're going to join in on a track with the Avalanches?
A lot of notes from Robbie.
Well, yeah, I mean, we had the overall, like, we had, for our own personal reasons, crystallized a very clear theme that we wanted to explore on this record. And we did that because our previous one had taken 16 years. So we were like, right, okay, we need a focus before we begin. We cannot get lost in the wilderness for 16 years again making a record, because that previous record was... making it was almost a search for what it was, you know.
Right.
And then for this album, we were very, very clear about what we wanted to express. It was almost like a single thought. So we had internally, like, some notes I shared with Tony, and I just tried to summarize how I was feeling at the beginning of the process. And then we ended up sharing those notes with every guest who was interested in being a part of this record. And then it's kind of very much on a case-by-case basis. Like, some people are very open and they're like, what should we try? What do you want to do? Do you have any lyrics? They want lyrics. They want melodies. They want back and forth. They want to be in the same room. Someone like Dev Hynes, for example, he was very much, I love this. I'm feeling it. Leave it with me. And that was it.
Right.
So people are very different. And that's what's beautiful for us, because we've only ever worked with each other before. So, and, you know, and stuck in small studios with thousands of old records, and that's how we've made music in the past. So this was a fascinating process for us to see how different artists work.
So what was that sort of short thesis statement you would give people about what the idea for this album was?
How do you explain this in a few words?
You can't really. I mean, I guess I talked we were interested in exploring our own mortality. I think we were a little older and reflecting back on our lives, what we're actually doing here on this planet, how precious life is. We're interested in exploring notions of what happens to us when we die and life after death, and also looking inwards to what the essence of us is as people. What are we all made out of? You know, because I have my identity in the world, right, which is a bunch of labels, like, I'm Robbie, I'm male, I'm Australian, I'm a musician, et cetera, et cetera. But beyond that, I feel like we're also much more vast. And we wanted to explore that. Like, what is that vastness? Who are we all really beyond our identities, and what connects us all? And then in parallel to that, we're interested in our own journey as sample-based musicians. And we often sample, you know, music from, say, the 30s or 40s, and the singer may have long since passed away. So our very art form is dealing with notions of time, memory,
ghosts,
and almost like we're summoning spirits when we sample very, very old music. So all those ideas began to tie together in our minds, and then perhaps we would find a sample like the Roaches sample that you mentioned earlier, and it just says beautifully, "We will always love you," and that almost seemed to sum up everything we were exploring. So that sort of was a jumping off point, and then we dove in with each artist from there.
So let's use Running Red Lights as an example. We're going to hear that next. You have Pink Sifu and Rivers Cuomo of Weezer on this song. So how did this collaboration come together? Maybe as a more concrete example, you can explain how this one came together. Tony?
This was the first one. So this was the first, right, I think. So this was the kind of test example. And I don't think we'd really got too much involved with the notes yet to Rivers. So I think it was more him just expressing, you know, how he feels. And so we gave him the song to listen to, and then he kind of sent us back three different sets of lyrics, which were just like, you know, four-line lyrics. And he said, you know, which one do you want? And then they were all amazing. So we went, can we just have them all? So he went, fine, okay, you can have them all. So they all ended up working themselves into the song. And that, you know, that was just such a great experience. It was like, you know, the almost not the catalyst, but it was like, yeah, let's keep doing this. This is good. Like, this is amazing hook. You know, let's keep reaching out to people to do this.
Okay, well, let's listen to Running Red Lights. This is Avalanches on World Cafe. Avalanches, Running Red Lights, featuring guests Rivers Cuomo and Pink Sifu. That is from the Avalanches' new album, We Will Always Love You. To really appreciate this album, I think it's important that we look at your whole body of work. I'm talking to Tony and Robbie of the Avalanches right now. Let's go back in time to your debut album from the year 2000, Since I Left You. One of the things that defined that album was the massive amount of sampling that you did. So I'm going to ask each of you this. Where did your fascination with sampling begin? Tony, why don't you go first?
Well, I got into sampling only after Robbie did. Kind of after that, I was like, oh, this is a real cool way of doing stuff. It's like when you can't play guitar very well and, you know, can't play anything super well. It's like, wow, you just kind of grab all these cool bits of people's music. And so it was definitely Robbie inspired me to get into sampling.
So, Robbie, what was it for you? Where did you first get bitten by that bug?
Well, I'm the same as Tony. Like, and we were both friends in high school. And, you know, it's almost like a deep need to express ourselves or something through music. But like Tony said, we were just like kind of bad musicians. We played in the garage of my house. And, you know, we could play a lot of instruments, like, just by feel, but, like, we weren't proficient. And so then it was like through hearing some early Big Audio Dynamite records. There was that Eno and David Byrne, My Life in the Bush of Ghosts record, you know, De La Soul, all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
And thinking, oh, maybe we can do this. You know, how do they make this music? And it was like, because we'd been messing around with on a four-track tape recorder, and it was a similar process to me. So it was more just came from an inside need to express and then just finding a way to do it. And I love that. And I love artists who do that in whatever medium they're working in. It's just like they've got something inside that they need to get out and they just figure out a way.
Yeah. I know Mick Jones makes an appearance on this album. And when I was sort of thinking about all this, Big Audio Dynamite, I think, was the first time I ever became conscious of sampling, because in The Globe, he samples Should I Stay or Should I Go? And I was a kid and I heard it in my mom's car on a tape before I ever heard Should I Stay or Should I Go? And then when I heard that, I was like, wait, where'd that sound come from? I know that from a different thing. And I was like, that was the first time I realized that sampling existed. You know, one term that people use for the kind of sampling that you guys do on your first two albums is plunder phonics. Because you really are, you're digging through vinyl and recordings to find these individual samples and putting together like a collage. I would imagine it's a really work-intensive way of creating. I've never done it. Why does it appeal to you that way? Like, why does that sort of technique appeal to you?
Yeah, I think it's like it was exactly what you mentioned, and you described it beautifully about hearing that sound from a Clash record on a Big Audio Dynamite record. And like my mind was just fascinated with it and the way it plays with time and the way it plays with memory. And you know, and we were also, I think it was because, you know, Australia is very geographically isolated from the rest of the world. So, and we were making our first album Since I Left You pre-internet, you know, and it was like the world was just this faraway place. You know, and Melbourne is at the bottom of Australia, like we're a long way from anywhere. And we could walk through these junk stores and find these records, these very easy to find records. Like, they weren't rare, obscure records. They were just literally junk. And it was a really beautiful process of turning this junk into something new, and also what we imagined the rest of the world might sound like. You know, right. The way to escape, you know, Australia's very, Australia has a very, I don't know how to describe the culture here, but we certainly dreamed of other worlds and other places, and it was a way to conjure that up for ourselves, I think.
Yeah. I'm speaking to Robbie and Tony of the Avalanches today on World Cafe. We're going to hear Frontier Psychiatrist, which was the biggest hit from Since I Left You. And I was wondering, you know, there's a ton of samples in here, including Canadian comedy duo Wayne and Schuster. if you could guess, I mean, maybe you know a number, but how many samples did you use in this one song?
It gets confusing because, you know, all the drums are little samples, and there'll be hi-hats and cymbal might be from this record or that record. So if you really go into detail, there's like a lot. Or, you know, bass notes or whatever we would chop up from different records, because literally we did not play any instruments on this first album. So on the newer album, you know, with our bass line might be a real bass guitar over a sample, but on Frontier Psychiatrist...
Shock horror.
On Frontier Psychiatrist, like every little bass note is we found from some old record or something, you know. So if you want to go to that ridiculous length detail, there would be hundreds and hundreds of little samples. But the main grooves are like 4 or 5 samples flipping in and out from each other, and then there's probably 30 different spoken word records chopped up in different ways to provide the wacky vocal samples, and yeah, so something like that.
Okay, so listen carefully and see how many you can count right now. It's a Frontier Psychiatrist from the Avalanches on World Cafe.
That boy needs therapy.
Psychosomatic.
And that boy needs therapy.
Purely psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
Lie down on the couch.
What does that mean?
You're a nut. You're crazy in the coconut.
What does that mean?
That boy needs therapy.
I'm gonna kill you.
That boy needs therapy.
Pranikazoo, let's have a chew. How about I count 3?
And that boy needs therapy.
He was white as a sheep.
And he also made false teeth.
That was Frontier Psychiatrist from the Avalanches' debut album, Since I Left You. That album came out in the year 2000. That song was very successful. I mean, I remember you were this band in Melbourne, Australia. I was watching that on TV in Canada. It was on MTV. It was a big thing. So how did things change for you as a band after that song and that album became so popular? Tony?
I was going to say, stuff got real. Like, it just felt like everything had been kind of fun and games until that point. Like, for me, it definitely just changed as far as it wasn't just a fun thing anymore. I mean, it was still fun, but it became something a lot more than that.
Yeah. Robbie, what about you?
Yeah, I agree with that. It was like the reason why that record has so many samples is we never really thought anyone would listen to it. And, you know, it was like, it was just a thing we made. And we were just having the time of our lives in the years previous to that, traveling around Australia, playing in pubs and clubs. And we were just crazy kids, you know. And I don't think we were really built for like being on, like, I can remember having been in Germany in a huge sports stadium and having to accept an MTV award or something. And it's like, just like, I was just thinking, what, like, we just kind of as people weren't really built for that or weren't ready for it. And we were very young and it was all a bit overwhelming, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In an interview that you did with NME a little while ago, Robbie, you said that 4 years after that album came out, your girlfriend at the time told you how people thought of it as a classic record, but you just heard all the stuff you could have done better. So when you listen back to that album now, you know, in 2020, what do you hear?
Oh, to me, I really enjoy listening to it. Like, we did a listening party on Twitter earlier this year, and it was the first time in forever I'd actually listened to it. And you listen to it in real time with people online, and it was really enjoyable. And I just had it just feels light. It feels extremely positive. It feels joyous. Mm. It's screaming with kind of the joy of creativity. Like, I can hear us being so excited, even just with the actual process of making music in that way. Yeah. And I get why people like why people enjoy it. You know, I get it.
Finally, finally.
This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris speaking with the Avalanches today. So your second album, Wildflower, didn't come out till 2016. You were working on it for a lot of that time in between. You've mentioned that, you know, you were documenting and sort of categorizing every sample and getting a little bogged down in the details. But what else was going on during that time? What was, because 16 years is a pretty long time. What happened?
There was a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't start, like, as we mentioned with Since I Left You, it was kind of all overwhelming. And back then records weren't released simultaneously online. So it came, was still coming out on a different label in America in 2003. And then they would want us to tour. And so we didn't really get home and settled till like 2004 or something. And then kind of dusted ourselves off and began. We did other soundtrack work. And then there was just our own personal journeys. Like, I have a history with addiction, and for a few years, I mean, Wildflower was kind of almost done then, but I did fall back into that, and that slowed things down. Tony was traveling a lot of DJing as well. Well, we did live life as well. So,
but it was like, to be honest, I feel like that we kind of let the pressure get to us a little bit of the, like as years went by, you know, Since I Left You did start to become this classic record. And like, you know, you said before that Robbie's girlfriend at the time said, you know, you realize this is a classic record, and it kind of just, as the years built up, there was a lot of pressure. Like, we really started to feel that pressure. And just as people, we weren't prepared for that, with how to deal with that pressure. And it took until we kind of released the baggage of our minds, that we were able to release the weight of expectation and everything. There were times we thought we weren't going to make it, but we did it. And isn't that amazing? It doesn't even matter what happens. Like, what a journey we've been on. It's 16 years of so much crazy stuff, and we did it. Like, we just felt like superheroes. It was honestly like the Lord of the Rings, Frodo and Sam. Like, it was just this crazy quest where you're like, there's no way this is going to happen.
A quest, it was
full on.
But yeah, that's a lovely way. It's lovely hearing Tony speak about that, because it reminds me, it's almost like we had to grow enough as people to get to a point where we could release it, well, we could finish it without caring what anyone thought.
For sure. I'm speaking with the Avalanches on World Cafe today. You know, I want to play a clip from Wildflower, but I was wondering if maybe you could help me choose one, because I was wondering if there was a deep musical find that you made during that process. One of the clips that you had in that catalog of samples where you knew, like, from the beginning that you're like, this has to fit into this album somehow. And maybe we can hear it on the record. Is there something that jumps out at you like that?
I guess the Chandra sample in some ways is another one. So, and it's kind of a lovely story. So she made this record, I think she was 12 or 13, and her dad was a famous New York artist. And she's like, I want to make a record. It was called the Transportation EP, actually, and it had four songs about transport. And one of the songs was called Subways. And we found this record in a junk store somewhere. And that almost summed up the spirit of, like, people making records at home, not giving a damn what anybody else thought, not giving a damn if they could play instruments, not giving a damn if about the proper way to make a record, you know. And her energy and just this beautiful spirit just captivated us, and her voice. And she obviously was incredibly talented as well. And so that's probably one of my favorites. And it was a slightly more pop moment on it. It was really cool. Turning this record of hers, which was a kind of a punk funk record, into like a pop disco-y thing. And that was really great.
Exactly.
Well, let's listen to a bit of Subways. This is the Avalanches on World Cafe. You walk on the subway, it moves around. You hear someone scream, so you go to see what you found. You walk on the subway, it moves around. You know, yeah. was Subways from The Avalanches. That's from their album Wildflower. I'm speaking with Robbie and Tony of The Avalanches about their new album, We Will Always Love You. The cover of your new album, We Will Always Love You, it's a photo of a woman's face. And I was wondering if one of you could describe it maybe for people who haven't seen it yet.
I guess she's peering out at you with beautiful eyes, and it's almost like you're unsure if she's underwater or if it's a transmission on a half tuned in TV set or something like that, or almost like she's a transmission from the other side.
Right.
Like it's like a half seen ghost or something. Yeah.
And it's a photo of Andrian, who was Carl Sagan's partner. And I heard that you originally wanted her voice on the album, and you ended up with the photo for the cover. Could you walk us through that a bit, Robbie?
Yeah. So, I mean, Anne and Carl's story is an incredibly beautiful story, and probably about halfway through making this record, we came across that story, and they were both put in charge of the Voyager Golden Record Project. And anybody who wants to have a look online and look for their love story, it's an incredibly beautiful story. They fell in love while compiling this record of the sounds of planet Earth.
That they were going to send to space.
Yeah.
So they were going to send out into space. It's attached to the side of the Voyager spacecraft, and it's still traveling out there now. And this record's been designed to last 1 billion years. And there's Beethoven on there and Chuck Berry and whale sounds and different human languages. And it was designed in case, intelligent life ever comes across it one day and they can learn a little bit about us. And Anne thought, well, what if I record my brainwaves and my heartbeat and we put them on the record as well? So maybe this society who finds this record one day is advanced enough to learn about our biology. And the day before she was about to have her brain scans and her heartbeat recorded for the Golden Record, Carl Sagan spontaneously proposed to her, and they'd fallen in love while making this record. And she tells this beautiful story about how forever now the sound of a young woman's heart madly in love will be floating out there in the cosmos long after planet Earth is no more. And when I heard that story, I nearly died. I'm like a hopeless romantic, and I was just like, damn, that is so beautiful. And then we began like some correspondence, and we were going to have a conversation with her in the studio just about her story and her life and use her voice as interludes on the album. And then that recording session was cancelled at the last minute, and we never found out why. I didn't even need to know why. I was just very grateful that her story existed in the first place, and it had been so inspiring to us. And then as we were finishing the album, lockdown was hitting, and we were still could not find a cover, and we thought, let's just write to Anne and ask if she minds us using her photo for the cover. And she said yes, and so that felt like a beautiful full circle where she was still part of the project. And our art director, Jonathan Sawada, ran the photo through a spectrograph where it's turned into sound and then back into image again. So that's the transmission you see on the cover now.
Yeah. The Golden Voyager record, and there's parts on this album. I believe the last track is the binary code message, transmitting the human DNA and earthly biochemicals. There seems to be like a space theme here. And I was wondering what it is about sending these messages, things like the Golden Voyager record, things like those binary code messages to some civilization. What is it that fascinates you so much about that?
I think it's just an extension of what we do. I mean, it's what we were exploring on this whole record, like, because we're sample-based artists. So what is the essence of sampling, and what is captured in the sound of someone's voice from maybe an old vinyl record 80 years ago, It's like almost like summoning spirits. And then you're thinking, we'll sample an old record and turn it into a new song, and that energy flows out there again. So what part of the process, like, we're just a small part of that flow, and then there's the listener, and then someone, then you broadcast it on the radio, and it's just like this flow. So it got us thinking about energy and what we're all made out of in the beginning, and also the radio waves that are broadcast every day from planet Earth are still floating out there in space. So we're constantly sending out these beautiful voices and this energy, and just the power of music to connect as well.
Yeah, and it is like, I love that whole idea of, you know, Earth is maybe just like Australia is. It's like down in the bottom, you know, in the middle of nowhere, but there is something else out there. So it's like transmitting to them and trying to get to that bigger audience and imagining what that would be like. Not audiences, in we want them to come to our shows or anything, but I'm fascinated with the idea of space and, you know, intelligent life and things like that. You know, there has to be something out there. So I love that whole idea of just kind of like open arms to those other...
To the universe, yeah.
To the universe.
Yeah.
I want to play another song from the new album, one more that feels appropriate. It is called Interstellar Love, featuring Leon Bridges. What can you tell us about this track before we hear it?
I'm grateful this track exists because when we submitted the demo to the record label, they were like, you're never going to be able to clear that sample. It's like an Alan Parsons Project sample. And I actually was probably a little naive about how in some parts of the world it was such a big hit, the original. So so that's part of the story, that we're grateful that we even got the sample cleared. And then, of course, being able to work with Leon was fantastic. And the fact that he was just, it all just happened in one day with him. So it was very lucky. It was just a gift to walk into the studio with someone. At the beginning of the day, you have nothing. And at the end of the day, you have a song like this. It was like, that was quite an experience for me, because normally our songs can take years.
Decades.
Yes. Decades. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, let's listen to Interstellar Love, The Avalanches on World Cafe. That was The Avalanches featuring Leon Bridges. That was Interstellar Love from their new album, We Will Always Love You. My guests today have been Robbie and Tony of The Avalanches. Thank you so much. It's been so great talking to you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
It's been lovely. Thanks so much.
It was a great chat, Raina.
Thank you. I'm Raina Duras. Thanks for listening to World Cafe from NPR.